You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Andrea Daly. So listen, I get to talk to a lot of people every day. I love it. I love it all over the world. I get to hear and interact with people who have many different inflections and accents, and they speak different languages and dialects. Some of them I can identify and others stump me completely. And in this conversation, I could not pinpoint what I was hearing in Andrea's inflection until the very end. Because listen, this is not at all the focus of the conversation Andrea and I had. She today lives in the southern part of the United States, but she grew up at least a little bit in Canada. So I think I was hearing the mix. So as you listen or watch this conversation, I'm curious if you pick up on those notes as she speaks as well. None of that, as I mentioned, is the point of our conversation. This is. Andrea and I talk about a time in her life when she chose to shift her identity and her focus and her purpose away from feeling and acting like a victim, victimhood, and instead choosing herself. She shares how she became aware that she needed to do this, what the process looked like for her, and what life looks like now on the other side of this transition. I think you're going to love this, so let's get to it. Welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. Andrea Daly, are you ready for a fun chat today?
Oh, I'm super excited. Thanks for having me.
You are so welcome. I'm going to start with two warm-up questions. The first one is always, what part of the world do you call home?
I am in Greenville, South Carolina. I've only been here for a little under a year, moved from the Charleston area, so I've gone from the beach to the mountains.
Oh, very interesting. All right. So you're new to where you are. I'm going to ask you, share with us something that you love or like or enjoy about the place where you live.
I love accessibility. So I moved a little bit out of the city, actually about an hour out of Charleston, and I was on the beach. I loved it, but it was very just calm, not a lot going on. It was a place of relaxing and healing for me, where now I'm downtown Greenville. It's boom, 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 lots of stuff. There's theater. There's always fun stuff going on in terms of parades or, you know, events or markets, and a lot of fun restaurants and just places to drop in and have a drink or go for a long walk. Love it.
That's fantastic. So you are you all right? I have lots. I'm not going to get off track. I was going to ask you all kind of questions, like how close you are to downtown, because I think that, you know, that is definitely so nice. Nice to be close to the action. All right. So Andrea, today we're going to talk about a time in your life when you realized that no one was coming to save you. I think those are probably the words that you wrote, actually. And you chose to shake off the identity of victimhood and choose yourself. Does that sound like a good conversation for us today?
That sounds like a great conversation. So many ways we can go with that.
Very cool. Very cool. I'm going to get right to the meat of the conversation. True story. A couple days ago, I was doing an interview and the guest was like, "Hey, are you trying to bury the lead?" And I was like, "I don't think I am. I'm trying to build the story, but maybe I was." So today we're going to get right to it. What was going on in your life that put you in a position where you felt like you were a victim?
Okay. So I'm going to have to give this to you in a sped up nutshell version, because we don't have 3 days for me to just sort of throw up on you. So
I appreciate that.
Yes. And so I spent 36 years married, and I had 9 children. I homeschooled all of my 9 children. I actually have a master's in psychology. So educated, electively chose to stay home with my children, loved what I was doing in terms of raising them. Unfortunately, came into the relationship with a bunch of daddy issues, chose a man who didn't love me well. This is all hindsight 2020. I get all this after the fact. And so I had a very empty marriage, and that didn't, you know, filling my love tank with all the children did not fix what my marriage ended up being. So after 36 years, my marriage ends, and I was completely lost. I was broken, alone. I had no support. I had no idea what to do. And I ended up just getting into the too much zone. I ended up doing too much busyness just to sort of distract me from what my reality was, too much loud music so I could drown out all the excessive thoughts in my head, too much alcohol just to numb the pain. And I ended up then just kind of throwing myself this big, long pity party. So now we're hitting the spiral. And that was that pity party, which is the victimhood mentality. And when resentment and anger joined that party, my heart turned so black. I knew there's the moment. I knew I was going to lose myself if I didn't proactively do something. And so, first thing I did was I did therapy. You know, I had friends saying, you just need to do some therapy. And therapy is great. I'm a psychologist. Therapy is fantastic. But I realized very early on that, you know, three, four sessions, this isn't what I needed. I didn't need to be digging all the bones out of my backyard. I didn't need that in that moment. I didn't need to go from dysfunctional to functional. I just wanted to go from functional to optimal. And so for me, what I did is I'm big into self-help. And so I enrolled in a 2-year-long coaching certification program with the sole purpose of just washing myself in it for 2 full years. And then
Wow.
in the midst of it, it was so transformational that I realized, gosh, women don't need to go through this stuff alone. And that's what prompted me and springboarded into me becoming a life coach.
So, all right, there's a lot in there. First of all, I just want to give you credit for telling a very complicated story, very briefly and very effectively. That was very good. I also want to touch on something. We're not going to dig into the nuts and bolts of the divorce because that's not really the theme of our conversation. But I do think it's worth touching base that you had a lot of academic professional preparation in your training. You were trained as a psychologist, and you still found yourself after 30 plus years in a relationship that had not worked out the way you expected. And I just raise that so that to give it some light again for people who are hearing, because I think people can be really hard on themselves that they should have known better. And that's fine. There's a million things we do all day long that we should have known better. You know, the first bite of the pizza is going to be too hot. It doesn't mean we don't sometimes do it anyway,
Right,
right?
right.
Yeah. Were you hard on yourself though at part of that, where you were like, I dug myself a hole that I could have seen in somebody else?
You know, I was young when I had my psychology degree. I actually never practiced because
Okay.
I just finished school, got my final degree, ended up pregnant, which wasn't necessarily intentional, but welcomed. I'm a third generation only child, so I didn't even know if I wanted children. If I was going to have children, it was definitely probably not going to be, it was going to be none or two. And so the whole concept of staying at home, I was
Yeah.
a professional. I was going to work. I still remember looking down my nose at women that stayed home going, what do you do all day? And then I gave birth to my first child. I was like, oh my God, I'm never leaving him. I'm never leaving. So I
So
didn't.
that is fascinating. How did you go from maybe none to nine as a
Again, I think
decision?
so the what was happening in the moment, well, or for 36 years, everything is now clear because of the extensive coaching and personal growth that I did post-divorce. I didn't realize I was just kind of living in the moment, going with feelings, just knowing how much I loved being a mom, just loved being a mom, you know, homeschooled. It was my purpose 24/7. My ex worked, paid the bills. He was narcissistic tendencies. I did everything else and it was exhausting, but that was my purpose. And so I was filling my love tank doing this. I had my purpose and these children because I lived in an empty marriage. So in the midst of it, I just thought that was my normal. And
Yeah.
so I think a lot of times, like when you go back to your original question, we can beat ourselves up. But you just do what you do when you think it's your normal. That's why women who are physically abused will end up back in that same relationship because they know how to navigate that. They don't know how to navigate being loved well. The abuse is their normal. So after the fact, when I look back at it and I started realizing I had daddy issues from my childhood and I never felt I was worthy of love. And so it makes sense that I subconsciously sought out a man and intentionally chose somebody who I knew when I was 19 was fully incapable of loving me well. That was the zone I was comfortable in.
Yeah, it was
So,
comfortable. Yeah. Yeah, that's that. So there's two like sort of platitudes that I hear a lot with that, like, so it's like they're not really platitudes, but they're just sort of reference points. It's like we are more likely to choose what is comfortable, even if we don't, if we know it's destructive, right? So it's like we will seek it back out. And then the other thing that I say all the time is normal is a moving target. Like, so it's like what feels normal now might not in the future, or, and you just don't know. Everybody's experienced that. It's like if it's normal for your family and then you go stay at somebody else's house and their normal is just so different. You're like, oh my gosh, you guys are so loud, or, you know, why do you eat at the, you know, it's like just normal everyday stuff. All right. So very good. How long ago was the divorce?
Separation was in 2020, officially
Okay.
divorced in 2022.
All right, so very good. So, like I said, I'm not going to dig into the details about the divorce, but was it like a mutual decision that you guys came to together, or was it something where it was, you feel like it was thrust upon you?
No, it was thrust upon me. My I'm
Okay.
until death do you part kind of gal. I was willing to. I'd already been living this long in what I felt was pretty much a loveless marriage. And then he made the decision, and that sort of he just told me, no longer in love with you anymore. I'm not leaving the marital home. You choose and do what you want. And I did not know at the time, but he'd already his heart had gone somewhere else. So I couldn't stay there. It had already been my final year in my marital home. It felt like a bit of emotional abuse. And so I just went completely emotionally reactive and I left. I just left. I didn't know what else to do, but I couldn't stay there. It was not a mentally stable environment for me.
All right. So that sounds like it was not a lot of fun. I say this probably in every conversation I have with people about divorce. I've talked to tons of people who are happy when I talk to them about being divorced. They're happy in their life and secure. But most people that I talk to, I would say all, but I'll couch it with a most just in case it's not totally accurate. They're not fans of the process of getting divorced. It can be an unpleasant time frame. In your process, I don't know if it was during or after it was complete officially, you shared that you say you took ownership of your healing. Share with us what that means.
I guess it goes back, it overlaps with the first original question you asked me in terms of, you know, what did you do when you realized nobody was coming to save you? That was really taking ownership. I could have just continued down the pathway of victimhood. And in my coaching profession, I meet a lot of women that have subconsciously chosen to wear the ball and chain of victimhood. That becomes their new identity. So to be able to choose to not do that, you have to be really deeply connected with yourself, gone through some personal growth to understand that's what you're doing to begin with, and then to go the other direction. This was my situation. I didn't like my situation. It didn't feel good. I remember Googling, how do I feel happy again? And will I ever feel happy again? I just wanted to make the best of a really shitty situation.
So this is a really interesting thing. So what you were searching for at the time, really like in like a very literal thing, you were plugging it in to the internet. How do I feel happy? Did you have any awareness that it was victimhood and, you know, ownership of your own situation that was driving it? Or did that come up when you sort of found yourself in this coaching program?
Is the coaching program that was just so transformational for me. It was able
Yeah.
to identify, label, and help me understand what was actually going on, the feelings I was having, the actions I was choosing to do. Those things were able to be labeled and put in containers for me to really clearly understand what I was doing.
I think that's an important part of this experience. Like, I like to talk to people about experiences, right? Because I think that when we go through things, we learn different things. We can be really hard on ourselves that we should be able to figure this out, but you can be working really hard to try and figure something out. And if you're just asking a question that doesn't lead to the right answer, the best of intentions doesn't get you anywhere. So if you're asking, how can I be happy? You know, what were some of the things that came back in those searches, if you remember?
I don't really remember clearly, but I do know that I went to a happy camp.
Oh.
It's like, meaning I'm not the only one searching for
Yes.
happiness. There was a happy camp up in the mountains somewhere, and it was, very yoga led or whatever. But I signed up for it because it was just like, okay, well, this is the biggest thing that I could find for myself.
That doesn't, we do a thing. I live in Miami and there's a thing called the World Happiness Summit that comes here. I've never been. I have no idea what happens there. What I will tell you is I looked up the pricing one time. I was like, wow, that is an investment for happiness camp. But because I would think that if you looked up how can I be happy again, my guess is that you're gonna get things that are like, find a hobby. Do something that you enjoy. And that's just not actually the same question as how do I work through this tough situation I'm in coming out of this 30 plus year marriage?
And I think the thing that most people in the throes of it don't really fully understand is transition is not like turning a page.
Right.
It's a season. It's kind of like grieving after death. It doesn't just end. You don't just go through the five stages of grief and okay, now I'm done. It keeps, and I'm still surprised to this day, it keeps rearing its head, the grief, the guilt. This is a process. Divorce, at least in my situation, isn't just something that happens, especially when you have kids. They
Right.
kind of
No,
feel
it never
disconnected
ends.
and yes, and it just never ends. And then all of a sudden there's triggers and there's this and there's that. I'm going, okay, it's long enough. I should be able to not have these emotions, but I do. And that's just part of understanding what's going on and having grace and space for myself to allow these uncomfortable feelings without them becoming my identity.
Yeah, no, but I think that finding the solution, first of all, is it can be more challenging than people think. And it's surprising that in 2026 that, there's no shortage of information. Information is all the way out there. But it is this interesting thing that if you're asking the wrong question, you'll get information. It just is not helpful information.
Yeah, it sounds like an
And
AI prompt.
it kind of
You gotta
is,
prompt
but
it right to get the
right,
right
no.
answer.
You don't get the right answer. And it's on us. Like it's on us, like until you ask somebody. But it's like, if you go to the doctor and say, my throat hurts, they're gonna look at your throat and they may not look at whether or not your elbow is bothering you. That's a terrible metaphor. But anyway, let's move on. Okay, here we go. So you sign up for this coaching program, 2 years of training in a coaching program. Was this something that you were aware of anyway that you had been looking, or how did this come into your How did you find it? How did you make this decision? Like, hey, I'm going to do this.
So I've never actually heard really much of life coaching. I knew it was out there. It wasn't even something I thought, oh, I should go find a life coach. I just knew the therapy wasn't working. And my mother actually used to be a life coach way back in the day. And so it really wasn't something that it didn't pop up into my mind, but she said, you might want to try that. The training in and of itself, again, for somebody that really likes to get into self-help, the training in and of itself can be super eye-opening. And so then I just started researching various different certification programs, and I picked the longest one just because I just wanted to be in it longer.
And so I love that you had this awareness that you were looking for something long. What would you do you remember, and this might be a bad question, do you remember why you thought you wanted something that was a long program?
I already knew at that stage whatever it was going to be, it wasn't going to be a quick fix. That this was something I'd already done a lot of the quick fixes and they weren't staying. It was like band-aids that kept kind of peeling off, or the stuff you keep sweeping under the carpet and finally you trip over the big hump under your rug. I knew that I was ready to do the hard work and I really wanted to deeply understand what was going on and the process. So that's why I really picked the longer one. I wanted accountability. Moving forward also in terms of the learning, but also the applying as well.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting because I think a lot of people. So, I mean, life coach certification is this weird thing where, first of all, you don't like it's life coach is totally unregulated. You can just wake up and say, ta-da, today I'm a life coach. But there are a whole gamut of programs, some of them very specialized, some of them highly academic, some of them very short. And I think that, a lot of people who are looking for something might actually be tempted to be like, I want something intense, I want something short. And you went the other way. You were like, I want something long and in depth. And so when I sort of put that back, does that sound right? And what do you think it was? What do you think was going on inside? Like, did you feel like you had like a big problem to solve? Like, what was driving that?
So I think the main difference between, why people would choose a short versus a long, for me at least, was I had no intention this was going to be my purpose in life. I didn't, I wasn't going, okay, I think my next chapter in my life, I'm going to be a life coach. That wasn't even on the radar. I just knew that I was broken. I was at the bottom and I needed to find a way to get out and start moving forward and proactively leave victimhood behind and embrace my life. So because it wasn't a professional choice, if it was a professional choice, I still, because I'm in education, I love education, I probably would have still chosen the one I felt was the better, longer version. But that wasn't my choice at the time. It was just, okay, it's going to take a while to get through what's going on. I already know that. So this is why I chose that pathway.
I love that, because there's a piece of me that would be like, oh my God, if this is going to take 2 years for me to fix, like... I would have been like, oh, where is the 6 month program? But I need immediate relief.
Well, I see, and I'd already been down that pathway. I'd already been down the pathway with trying to find immediate relief, trying to fix this, trying to, you know, while I was numbing all the pain, waiting for time to take its healing power. And none of those were working. I'd already tried everything that I felt like was the quick release, even the happy camp.
Happy camp, 100%. Do you think that if somebody had showed you the ad or the sales page for the 2-year program, like 3 months after, like at the beginning when you were looking for quick fixes, do you think that it would have looked at all and appealing? Do you think you kind of had to go through the process?
Go through the process of hitting rock bottom to finally. I think that's no matter what it is, when we have a huge trauma in our life of some kind, it's usually the hitting rock bottom that makes people willing to start doing all the extra work it's going to take to start clawing their way out. When they finally realize there's no other way but going straight through the fire, and it's going to be painful, it's going to take time, but slow and steady wins the race.
There you go. All right. So what did the shift for you, what did it look like and feel like as you were switching from the victimhood to a person who was taking ownership of the situation and your healing?
That's a good question. I think it was very multifaceted because there were so many things I was learning about myself. I didn't even, like I said, I had a lot of psychology on board, but I had been a mom. That's what I was. I was mom, teacher, wife, you know, domestic engineer. That was my identity. So I think the biggest thing, it's not even just switching from victim mentality, is when I found myself alone, it was like, who the heck am I? I didn't even know who I was. I didn't know what kind of food I liked. I didn't know what kind of music I liked. I didn't know the answer to any of those questions because I had put myself at the bottom of the totem pole for so long. And I really wasn't aware that I did that. So my loss of identity was really, that totally caught me off guard. And then having to figure out why I behaved the way I did. Why did I make the choices that I did? I had no idea that I thought I was unworthy of love. I would have never thought that in a million years, but that was peeled back in my coaching process while I was being coached. And that was like a huge eye opener. That all of a sudden, I was like, ding, 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 ding. There's the reason why I made so many choices and just sort of tolerated certain behaviors for so long. So it was, like I said, multifaceted in the learning element in terms of, and still, okay, victim, you went back to the victim question. I can still pop into that super easy. But it's the fact I have developed self-awareness through the coaching techniques that you get to be able to recognize that's what I'm doing and pull myself out of it much quicker.
When you catch yourself, I'm asking this not as an evaluation of you or anything that you've been through, but to give you a chance to describe like what this feels like for people who are wondering, when you, in their own lives, when you catch yourself in that position where you realize now that you know that you're treating yourself or accepting a spot of victim, what does that feel like? And what is the awareness? How does it like walk us through like a situation or like a description of you saying to yourself, oh, wait a second, this is me treating myself as a victim?
Okay. So one example that comes up, it's usually, you know, it's in my head versus an action that I'm out there, you know, banging my head against the wall. Woe is me. Look at me. I'm a victim. It's more the ticker tape that's going across my forehead and the words that I'm saying to myself. And developing your self-awareness to recognize this is what you're doing, super important, because most of us are busy worrying about the future or reminiscing in the past. We're not in the present. And it's the present where you're going to have your self-awareness. So once you're able to develop that skill of recognizing, okay, the words I'm saying are not serving me. how can I reframe it? What can I do? Can I either just let it go, or can I think it in a different way so it's no longer a thorn in my side, hurting me, and now empowers me? And I remember there was a time I was walking on the beach. Actually, I went back to the beach, beach girl at heart, have to get my toes in the sand. And I was just walking on the beach barefoot. I was enjoying the ocean waves and sucking in the ocean air. And then all of a sudden, I found myself in this conversation with my ex-husband, literally speaking like as if it's a character on a stage, speaking out. I felt like it was almost out loud. And it was like, why would you pick her? She's a beach girl. You hate the beach. You're a mountain man. And then it continues spiraling. The only reason why she even picked you is because you have a for sale sign on your head, and boom, now I'm into the negative conversation with myself, and self-awareness has kicked in. I
Okay.
literally stopped on the beach, just grounded my feet, and I put my hand, I'm sure I yelled it out loud, "This is not serving me, not serving me at all." And I'm sure I screamed it several times into the ocean air, took a few big deep breaths, and then grounded myself and just continued on my walk, and it actually felt peaceful. So in this particular case, I was able to just let it go. There's
Yeah.
other times you have to, because it's not serving me. The past, it's not serving me, the conversation's not. Well, other times you have to actually reframe and change what you're thinking because you can't get out of the situation. You're going to be in a room with somebody you might not like. Change what you're thinking to change the way you feel about this person.
I really want to say thank you for giving us that example of some of the words that were running through your mind, the ticker tape and the conversation that you were replaying in real time. Because as we talked about earlier, first of all, nobody knows what's going through anybody else's head, right? So like this is a thing that you have to like we can only do for ourselves. And normal, like we said, it feels like it's normal. Like, it's that awareness that you think that this is always that everybody's feeling these same, hearing these same thoughts, and so on and so forth. So I want to say thank you for sharing that. Okay, so what changed? So you're out of the divorce. You realize that you try some quick fixes. You become aware that you're numbing out through music, loud music. That I had not heard before, but I love it. Alcohol, which is a super common numbing thing for loneliness and insecurity in like a transition, very socially acceptable. So you're doing those things. You come aware. You sign up for the coaching course. What begins to change? Like, what does change look like in your day-to-day life as you make this shift?
I think the biggest thing for me was it became my new purpose. I felt like I was kind of left purposeless. At this point in time, I was being a mom 50% of the time. I had three boys traveling back and forth between their dad and I every week. And so I was kind of part-time mom, and going from full-time mom, and that was my entire purpose because I also homeschooled, to just part-time mom, and I find myself alone for a week, really not even knowing who I am and what my identity is, and having zero purpose anymore because I couldn't even homeschool the way I used to because it was my half the time. Going through the coaching program for me just became my new purpose, my new reason to wake up in the morning, take my eyes off of myself, focus on something else. I'm learning, I'm stretching my brain versus spiraling.
Yeah. So the first thing that you began to see is that you selected something that gave you a purpose, and it was keeping you busy,
Yes.
keeping you busy and giving you something to do. What was the next thing that changed? Because the coaching program was going to end. So let's look at like a day before you started the coaching program. How much of your time was spent sort of spinning out and being stuck in victimhood? And then what did it look like sort of after you'd finished the coaching program and you had done some of this work? What were some of the differences between those two versions of you?
So there's a lot of time. I mean, just the spinning out and feeling like I was stuck in victimhood, that was most of my time. Still trying to struggle to figure out why this happened to me? Why are my children this? Why this? That was kind of what I've spent my time, especially my alone time. And then let's not even start getting into the whole dating world and what that might have looked like. That was a whole other numbing thing as well. And then at the end, like during the transformation that happened during the coaching program, I learned so much about myself. And then it was through that process that I realized, oh my gosh, this is my new purpose too. Like I did this alone. We don't have to, as women, go through these transitions alone. So after the coaching program, I think like everybody, and I don't know what everybody's normal is, but based on the clients that I coach, even when you get healthy and in an optimal place, we can slip into victimhood super easy. Like, look at road rage, right? I mean,
Oh,
road
yeah.
rage is somebody slips in front of you and becomes all about you. It's kind of, so it's super easy to slip into. But now, post coaching, when I've got my certification, I have a purpose. This is my, I felt very passionate about stepping in and being able to come alongside women going through any kind of major life change. And so that became this passion, this fire in me that just drove me on a day-to-day basis with this new purpose in my life.
All right, very cool, very cool. All right, so this experience, you've touched on this, but I'll give you a chance to talk about it directly. This experience of going through this transition that surprised you, and sort of swept the rug out from under your feet, and then the process for you of healing involved a coaching certification. It relates to what you do today as a profession. So in a second, we're going to wrap this up with the final questions, but I want to give you a chance to tell people how you put this together in your own life and what you do today as a professional.
So I work with women that are navigating big life changes to help them get the courage and the clarity and the confidence to be able to move forward in their life and not feel like they're doing it alone, and to learn how to navigate that in-between season in a healthy way. I work online most of the time. I also do public speaking, so I will go and speak to women's groups as well. But my clients, one-on-one, it's all virtual, so we work online. So I have clients around the world, and we just go through something I have created called the Empowered You Method, which takes them from exactly where they are to where they want to be. And it's a very methodical sort of process. I use an assessment called the Energy Leadership Index Assessment, which was trained, I was training through that for my coaching program. And what I love about it is that it is an attitudinal assessment. It's not something that puts you in a box like a personality assessment, which I love as well, but it's one of these assessments that shows you how are you showing up today and what happens when stress enters the picture. And if you like or don't like how you're showing up today, teaching you ways to be able to augment and change that so that you're in control of those responses.
Very good. When somebody's going through a transition, I'm going to move into the offer, but I have one more question. So, like, when somebody's going through a transition at the very beginning, and I'm thinking about how you described your awareness of this, because we use this word clarity in the coaching space, but do you automatically know that you're in a transition phase, or does it show up in a different way?
That's a super good question, because I had a friend when I first moved to Greenville. I met her and we were talking about, major life transitions. And I was making reference to her, how she was going through major life transitions. She goes, "What? I'm not going through a major life transition." Okay, so she just relocated from Florida to Greenville by herself. She just came out of a major breakup in a relationship. And she just got a new job. And she literally looked at me and she wasn't joking. And she's like, "I'm not going through a major life transition." So I think as women, we have been, depending how old you are, we've been brought up in a culture that says, "Girl, pull up your big girl panties, just keep on trucking. You just keep plowing through it. You can do it. I am woman, hear me roar." And that's got good stuff, and there's sunshine in there. But the shadow is, we don't even allow ourselves to recognize when we are going through something big. It just becomes our normal. "Oh, I've been through it before, I can do it again." So that's funny. I totally thought of my friend as soon as you asked me that question. I think that's very normal,
I
if
do
there's that
too. And
word.
I think you do need somebody. It's very helpful to have somebody point out, like, hey, you might be going through a transition, because it's like you're in the weeds. It's like very hard to see what's going on when you're in the middle of it. And I would love to say that I think that younger generations are more prepared for this than people our age, but I don't think that's totally true. I think that some of it is humanity. It's like when you're busy living day to day and you've got that overwhelm, it's very hard to see the transition. All right, so
Well,
you have a
just to ask that on that question as well. Look, when you look at empty nesting, okay, so you've had a child, a bundle of children, whatever it is, they're not going to live with you forever. They're going to end up leaving your nest. But we still, especially as moms, have this emotional response when the last one leaves, and we don't really understand why. We don't understand, why am I feeling this way? Why do I not know who I am?
Right.
You're going through a huge transition, but they don't see it that way. They just say, well, my kids are gone.
Right. It's like, I'm sad. I need a puppy. Right.
And that's normal.
Exactly. This is like, yes, exactly. And then as opposed to processing the transition, which is a different way to do it. All right. So you have a special offer for the audience, which I'm going to share, which is a free guide to navigating major life transitions. It's a companion for when life feels uncertain, a little light help to help you move forward with more ease and self-compassion. There is a link for this offer in the audio show notes and the YouTube description, and also for all the subscribers of the Imperfect Adulting email community, which everybody should sign up, because then I email it to your inbox and you can just click on it there. You don't have to go hunting through a variety of apps. Thank you very, very much, Andrea, for that generous offer. I hope that lots of people take advantage of it. Are you ready to wrap this up with my three random questions?
Three random questions. Shoot.
All right, here we go. All right. I shared some time ago on the show that I had a story about learning to drive a stick shift in the car where I made my dad get out and talk to the people behind us, but then I scooted up the hill and made it. You shared on your intake form that you also have a story about learning to drive a stick shift. What is your story?
Yeah, it does not bring back warm, fuzzy memories. So I grew up in Canada, and so lots of snow. This particular memory happened in New Brunswick, Canada. And there was an area where there was a lot of hills. And so it was wintertime. Again, it's a stick shift. I'm with the driver's ed instructor, not a family member. And so we get to, and I'm sure you can resonate with this, those traffic lights, all the traffic lights right in the middle of a hill. And so it's like, shoot, it turns red. I'm sitting in the car. It's like, oh, now my heart's starting to palpitate because I'm the first in the line. And so the light turns green and I just kept popping the clutch. And the guys go, okay, try it again, try it again. And I was an impatient, easy to anger teenager. And maybe on the fifth time I said, I'm done with this. And I just shut off the car, put it in park, got out of the car, walked back to the high school.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I didn't get my license right away. It took a little while. He was not happy with my attitude, but I did back then have a little chip on my shoulder.
I love it. You're like, I'm done. It's all yours. You take it.
Oh yeah. I hit my limit.
All right. Very good. All right. Next question. Do you enjoy museums? And if you do, what would you say is your favorite museum? And you can pick any place all over the world.
I do enjoy museums. I've noticed that I'm less like artifacty and I'm more like painting. And I really like the Impressionists. And so when I did go to a great museum in Amsterdam, but the one that's going to stand out for me is when I went to the museum that hosted all of the Monet paintings in France. That was probably my favorite one. I ended up going to his house and saw that I have a real affinity towards Impressionism, but also Monet.
Oh, that sounds spectacular. All right. So then Monet, was it like in the countryside, or was it in Paris? Like it was like an exhibit. Do you remember?
Is it Givry is
maybe.
His home?
Oh, yeah, and that's
where
they
his
have
home is, but the museum was actually in Paris.
Okay. All right. Very cool. What a wonderful memory. What a very cool story. All right. Very good. What is the third and final, what is the last thing that you bought for yourself that you think that everybody should buy for themselves because it's just that good?
Oh gosh. Now you're going to make me think, because unfortunately I do buy stuff for myself, but not because everybody is going to enjoy it, but because I specifically. So I've got something right in front of me that isn't for everybody, but it's a hand warmer. I had Raynaud syndrome where my fingertips go white. I have circulation issues. And I went to a women's conference recently. Never heard of this before. Went to a women's conference recently and I was, you know, my hands, I'm going, and I met this woman. Said, well, have you not heard, you know, got the hand warmers? And I was like, no. And she brought it out, let me use it for an hour. Game changer. I mean, game changer. So
that is amazing.
I've got one in almost every room.
Is it like, so it's just battery powered? It's just like you just turn it on?
These are like rechargeable.
And rechargeable.
Different shapes and sizes. So I've got a couple of little ones that just sit in your palm, or if I'm going for a walk. This one is a big handheld hold on to it. I was using it right before our interview to warm up my fingers.
What a fantastic! I've seen the ones like the little temporary ones that you use in cold weather. You'll put in your pockets that you like sort of shake them and they or crack the thing in the inside. But I've never seen those. That is an amazing thing. I'm so thankful you shared it. That's it, Andrea Daly. Thank you so much for being a wonderful guest on today's show.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi, again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.